නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස දම ෆ්‍රෙන්ඩ්ස් වීව ඩිස්කසිං පොට්ටපාද සුත්ත which is fairly comprehensive and it's a long discourse coming under the Diga Nikaya, long discourses of the Buddha. And actually now we have come fairly towards the end of the sutta, but still there are some significant points to highlight. And if I quickly run through what we have discussed, Pottapada asked a question related to a gradual cessation of perceptions, and then Buddha gave a comprehensive answer, starting with morality and discussing about various moral aspects, precepts, and then explain the importance of the self-restraint, and then explain the mindfulness and clear comprehension, and then how to be content, because this is actually oriented towards the practitioners mainly, and Pottapada and his followers are renunciants. So basically, therefore, Buddha's answer is fairly oriented towards a renunciant group. But anyway, either it is a renunciant or a late practitioner, to some extent, these teachings are quite practical and quite important to our own practice. And then basically, when Buddha explains particularly about the contentment, say for example, when one is contented about his food, dwelling place, then the medicine and the clothing. So that is very much the four requisites a monk is using. And there Buddha mentioned, try to be contented with what you have. So that mindset actually helps us to spend more time on meditation, because otherwise we would spend more time on acquiring those requisites and looking after the best type of requisites. And this is applicable to lay life as well. So if you are not satisfied with what you have, always want to have more and more, always want to possess this and that, so then your time is fairly spent on those activities, acquiring those luxurious items. Ultimately, you don't have enough time for your own spiritual growth. So therefore, being contented with what we have is one aspect of the spiritual life, where you have something to eat, something to drink, something to dwell, somewhere to dwell, and there's a, say you have a kind of a job to run yourself and to maintain your family. So likewise, certain things are available. It is not that you are entirely poor, but you are having something and have some sort of a contentment in yourself. With that contentment, then you are continuing your practice in the concentration development. So first part is actually the morality part, Sila Sikha. And now Buddha explained the Samadhi Sikha, where one has to step by step develop the mind. So there Buddha mentioned the importance of abandoning the hindrances. And once the hindrances are abandoned, there's a gladness arise in the mind that is quite natural to the mind. Because these hindrances are the ones basically hinder the mind, block the mind, cover the mind. But once they are subsided, the inherent quality of kind of a slight gladness can arouse in the mind. And when such gladness is there, it can grow towards piti, pasaddi, where the rapture and the tranquility is available. And such tranquil mind, calm mind, lighter mind feels comfortable. Bodily comfort and the mental comfort is available. When that is there, mind gets concentrated. So now that part is done. Now there is a higher level of training happen in the jhana level, where Buddha explained one may abandon lust, hatred, then the sloth and torpor, ill will, and all that hindrances and all the perceptions pertaining to those hindrances. And once those are abandoned, one may be able to establish in the first jhana. And there are various other things to do, but basically one may now perceive the first jhana. So it is very much a subtle perception when compared with the previous gross perceptions. Now one is in the subtle perception, and the perception is very much acquired by detachment, by relinquishment, by detached through these sense pleasures. So therefore, that is the perception now one may have. And one may now try towards the second jhana, where even subtle perception is available. That perception is more consolidated through the concentration. Concentration is more firm. As a result of that, there's a very slight perception coming out of that quite consolidated concentration. And then one moves towards the third jhana, where the perceptions towards this rapture is also abandoned. Now mind is quite calm, quiet, and again contented. And then one moves towards the fourth jhana, where even that happiness is abandoned. One may have a perception of equanimity. So likewise, one of the important point Buddha highlights here is through the practice one may be able to arouse a kind of a beneficial subtle perception, and through the practice one may be able to abandon some kind of an unuseful or a kind of a gross perception. So the training is the important part. Sikkha eka sanya upajjati, sikkha eka sanya nirujjati. So that is the term Buddha refer here. Through the practice one is able to arouse a useful, beneficial, subtle perception, and through the practice one is able to abandon what is unbeneficial and gross perception. So that is the theory continuously applied in this whole process, and Buddha through this kind of an approach takes or explains your Pottapada till he reaches the nothingness. And once he reaches nothingness, there Buddha mentioned that the yogi make a radical reflection. He understood that now he is abandoning gross perception and always trying to arouse or establish a new subtle perception. Now he is somewhat disillusioned by this process. Now he want to completely abandon all the perceptions. So he take a resolution: may I not have any kind of a volition to arouse new perception, and now I am trying to abandon what is available. Chete manasame papiyo atete manasame seyo. So whatever the volition, intention that I am trying is gross, is mundane. So how about not having any intention, abandoning even subtle intentions? As a result of that, nacheva cheteti nacha abhisankharoti. As a result of that, he now try to not to make any intention and not to make any constructions, preparations in the mind. So he stops chetana altogether, sankhara altogether. As a result of that, now his mind touches what you call the nirodha, the cessation. And then a very important question asked by Pottapada, now he is asking, are you putting only one, this kind of summit of perception, where that yogi is making that radical reflection, or are there many summits of perception? Then Buddha mentioned that he declare several summits of this perceptions and single summit of perception as well. Then Pottapada asked how. Then Buddha explained, wherever the yogi decide that I now want to stop all volitions altogether, I now want to stop thinking, I now want to stop proliferation, I now want to stop all the intentional activities. So that is the summit of perception. That can be considered as a summit of perception. It doesn't need to be a kind of a very higher, deeper arupa jhana. It can even be first jhana. And while being there, now one may do that determination. As a result of that, he can touch the cessation, nirodha. Now, after that being discussed, now Pottapada actually go on asking various other questions. Those are more relevant to the, what you call the self. Because he is coming from a tradition which is strongly believing a self, and he is asking various questions related to the self. And there are 10 questions which are made out of the belief of self. And Buddha basically has abandoned those questions, has not answered those questions. And then actually Buddha abandoned all those questions, and he didn't answer any of those 10 questions. And then Potapada asked, why you are not answering these? Then Buddha mentioned, none of these questions are targeted towards emancipation, liberation. These are causing more confusion and based on some wrong understandings. And again, they are not leading towards dispassion, disenchantment, relinquishment, enlightenment, wisdom. So that's why I am not answering these 10 questions, declaring these 10 questions. I am not giving a definite answer to these 10 questions. I am not declaring anything, because this is the reason. Then Potapada asks, what are you declaring? What are the things that you talk with definite terms? Then Buddha explained about the Four Noble Truths. I am declaring there is suffering, there is cause of suffering, there is cessation of suffering, and there is a path leading to the cessation of suffering. And then Potapada asked, why are you declaring those four? Then Buddha answered, they are leading towards enlightenment, they are leading towards emancipation, they are leading towards wisdom, relinquishment, and then say disenchantment, detachment, and the Nibbana. So that's why I am declaring those Four Noble Truths. So after finishing the discussion, then Buddha left, and then the next, after a couple of days, Potapada along with another person called Chitta is now going to meet the Buddha. And then again Potapada remembers or recalls the previous incident. The discussion had happened at the Potapada's place. Then again he reminds that after you left, after Buddha left, that my colleagues actually started to criticize me. They used various criticisms because I was agreeable to your answers. I was quite happy about your answers, but they are not. They are criticizing my behavior. And at that time, Buddha mentioned, you are the only one who had eyes. You are the only one who has less defilement, so that you can understand what I am talking. None of them are capable of understanding what I am talking. So that is why they are behaving like that. Now, again the same points are discussed here also, to the second time, that Potapada asked the 10 questions and why Buddha has not declared them. And then he asks what you are declaring, and then Buddha talks about Four Noble Truths. And then again why Buddha is declaring them, then the same answer is given, that they are leading towards the emancipation, enlightenment. And then, so after mentioning all these things, now there is an interesting discussion again started related to the another level of self-view. So basically Buddha start to mention about certain Brahmins, ascetics. So Buddha mentioned, so there are some ascetics and Brahmins who declare and believe that after the death, self is entirely happy and free from disease. Now this is a kind of an eternal view. So after the death, there is an eternal happy state of consciousness, perception, and it's an entirely happy self. So this is a belief they had. And even nowadays, they have such kind of a belief, certain kind of beliefs out there. So they believe that, assume that you are living a good life here. So after the death, you will be reborn in a kind of a world which is entirely happy, no suffering at all. So you are endlessly happy, eternally happy, continuously happy, permanently happy. So this is a kind of a belief even today available with certain religions. Now Buddha mentioned here, when they are talking like this, I ask from them, I approach them and I ask, are you are you in that place right now? So this is a different way Buddha approach here, and all the different points are highlighted. So if this is that world that you are calling the completely happy world, are you feeling completely happy now? Then say, they say no. So basically then that means present life is not that particular life or the world that we are talking. So they deny that. They accept that they are not in a completely permanently happy world right now. And then Buddha further refine it, and he asks, are you experience even a single whole day or a half day, whole night or half night, completely happy, entirely happy? Then they still say, no, we are not. And then Buddha asks, do you know a path which is leading to that entirely happy world? And then again these people say no. And again Buddha asks, are there any deities who are returning from that world time to time and telling us, okay, I am there, I have born into this particular entirely happy world, so this is the path I have followed to reach this state. So likewise they are kind of talking in proven of such a world. Are there such deities? Then those Brahmins, ascetics, they say no. Then Buddha give a very interesting simile here. Quite interesting. So the simile is very much about a love affair. So one guy is there. So he want to marry the most beautiful woman in the city. Now that is his wish. Now his friends and his relatives, maybe his parents, all are coming and asking, now you are fallen in love with this most beautiful woman in the city. Have you seen her? This fellow say, no, I haven't. Do you know whether she is tall or whether she is fat or whether she is fair or that kind of complexion? Do you know? This fellow say, no. Do you know which clan she belongs to? Either she is a Shakyan clan or Brahmin or coming from the Vesa or Shuddha. So do you know her caste? Then this person say no. Do you know exactly where she is dwelling right now? This fellow say no. Then Buddha say, even though this person is telling that I want to marry this beautiful, most beautiful girl in this whole city, if he hasn't even seen her, don't know any information about her, so what he talks is very much like baseless. There is no any kind of a ground to what he is talking. So same way Buddha mentioned, so these ascetics who are talking about the most beautiful, happy, pleasant, everlasting kind of a world, so none of them have experienced it, none of them have gone there, and they don't even have a proper path to that, and no even a deity from that world come and tell that I have born there. So there are no proofs as a result of that. So that kind of a belief is baseless. And another interesting simile Buddha give here. And Buddha mentioned that there is a person, he is building a staircase, just a staircase. And then people come and ask him, now you are building a staircase to a palace. Where is that palace? Is it into your left side? Is it into your right side? Is it in the east direction? Is it in the west direction? Or in the north direction? Or the south direction? So where is the palace? Then he say, no, I don't know where it is. But you are building the staircase. Yes, I am building the staircase. So then again Buddha mentioned, so this is useless, this is baseless, because he is building a staircase to a non-available palace, kind of an imaginary palace, and even he doesn't know where it is located. So this is very much like a baseless activity. So similarly, Buddha mentioned those ascetics which are declaring an everlasting self is doing something wrong, something meaningless. And now Buddha explained about the self-view that people are having. Actually, his answer here or explanation here is based on the three realms. So you know, the one realm is called the Kamaloka, the sensual world, where the say hell realms are available, and the human realm is available, and six what you call this heavenly realms are available. So altogether, there are 11 realms are available, and all are actually sensual realm, Kamaloka. And then there are 16 Rupa Loka, Rupa Brahma realms, material Brahma realms, 16. And they have actually the perfect Rupa. Their body is a perfect one, no defects at all. And that's called the Brahma realm. Actually, one has to attain that through meditation, through jhana. And then there is an arupa world. There is no form at all, but just the perception. Feeling and perceptions are there, consciousness are there. So only the arupa, only the non-matter, immateriality is there. So these are the three levels of realms that typically mention in Dhamma, and this is very much discussed in the other Brahmanism as well. And so Buddha mentioned here, now all these three realms, people have a kind of an acquired self. Suppose someone is born to a human realm, so he now sort of feel that he has a self which is with the gross body, and sometimes they consider this gross body itself is the self, and he basically maintaining a kind of an acquired self. A self view is maintained, self view is very much like accepted, being on that self view they are operating. Suppose one is born in immaterial, sorry, material Brahma realm, Rupa Brahma realm. First jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. So there are 16 such Brahma realms. So they are also, they have the perfect body. And they are also still, they have the perception of self, acquired self. And it's a long lifespan. And now assume that one is in the Arupa Brahma realm. So there also one may have the perception of self, a perception of acquired self. It is not a true self, but a perception of acquired self. So therefore Buddha mentioned, so there are these three kinds of acquired self. One is the gross acquired self, what one has, this human realms and all the sensual realms. And then there's a mind-made acquired self, that is the Rupa Brahma realm, related acquired self, and then the formless acquired self. And then Buddha mentioned, what is the gross acquired self? So it is this form, basically, he's highlighting the form, where it is based on the four great elements, Pathavi, Apo, Tejo, Vayu, and again, it is defective, and again, it is maintained through nutrients. So those are, so that is the self that people believe. What is in the gross self? And then when it comes to the jhana realms, material jhana realms, so that is a perfect one, a form complete in all parts, not defective. And then the third one is the arupa jhanic realm. So there one has the formless. Now, interesting point here is that even though Buddha give an explanation on this, he doesn't want us to be in any of these levels. That is an interesting point. He mentioned here, but I teach a doctrine for getting rid of this, for the getting rid of the gross acquired self. Suppose now we are in the human realm. Rather than affirming the human realm and trying to again and again born into the human realm and try to be satisfied in the human realm and thinking that this is the best place to stay and to sort of talk louder about the human realm. Rather, Buddha mentioned, I am teaching a doctrine which is helping to be free from this human realm. So this is an interesting point. And so basically for that, so Buddha mentioned, so the defiling mental states are going to be disappeared. Now, we are born here due to various causes and conditions. Right now also the mind is defiled. Still, enough strength is not available. So as a result of that, we are not free from this human realm with this acquired self, gross acquired self. Now, Buddha is teaching us a path which is helping us to be free from these deficiencies and to build the strength. So therefore, he mentioned here, now, if one is following my path, so he is able to abandon the defiling mental states, and he is able to purify himself, and he may have the strength which is necessary, and he may have the perfection of the wisdom. And when one has such kind of a wisdom and one is able to realize it and attain by one's own knowledge, so then he is able to free from this karma loka, the sensual world. And then very interestingly, so Buddha mentioned, so now all the mental states, defiling mental states are abandoned, all the necessary strength is built, and again the perfection of wisdom is achieved, and your mind has realized. Now, actually, Buddha explaining this state to Pottapada. Now, probably, now he is making a point here. Probably you might think this is a kind of an unhappy state. So this is a kind of a doubt that Buddha is trying to clear, which can arouse in a person who hasn't yet experienced it. Now, basically, Buddha here theoretically explained the situation. Theoretically, he is trying to explain what he is going to teach, what would be the result. He is trying to theoretically convince Pottapada. So therefore, he further clarifies a certain point. Now, once all the refinements are abandoned, once all the necessary skills are developed, the perfection of wisdom is achieved, probably you might think it's an unhappy state, but don't think so. It is not an unhappy state. It is a happy state. It's a tranquil state. And you should regard that as a tranquil state, because all the defilements are abandoned and happiness is there, delight is developed, tranquility is available, mindfulness and clear awareness is there, and therefore it is a happy state. Basically, Buddha is trying to convince Pottapada, because Pottapada hasn't yet practiced it. Now here actually, to a person who hasn't practiced it, Buddha is explaining his teaching and the ultimate result of his teaching and convincing him it is not an unhappy state. The result is not an unhappy state, but it is a very pleasing state, kind of a comfortable state. The mind would be more pleasing, more happy. And similarly, Buddha explained about the other two types of acquired self. Actually, I am talking about the other acquired self that is pertaining to the material rupa realm, and there also I am teaching to abandon that acquired self, not to affirm that acquired self. Rather, I am teaching to relinquish that acquired self. Suppose there is a Brahma coming and asking certain questions. Probably he is living for eons of time, because their lifespan is so long, and probably they may have a wrong perception that their life is eternal, and they think that they have a perception, it's a kind of a self, I am self. So it could be so strong because but in sensual realm we all can understand, okay, we are living maybe 70-80 years, so therefore we don't have the eternal life. That is quite obvious. But on the other hand, in the Brahma realm, when they are spending there for long time, they think that I am eternal, I am everlasting. So, but here Buddha highlights, even that state is not permanent, it is not the self, it is not an eternal self. And even this level I am trying to relinquish. I am teaching a Dhamma which helps to abandon this acquired self. And again Buddha highlights, I mean, when the defiling states which is supporting this acquired self are now being abandoned, and whatever the necessary strength being built up, the wisdom is developed. Now this is a kind of a happy state. So when all the defilements are abandoned, all the necessary skills are developed and the wisdom is available, and then what you have is a very wise mental state. It's a kind of a happy mental state. Don't think it as a unhappy mental state. Again, Buddha tried to convince Pottapada. And then Buddha goes on to explain the third acquired self, that is the Arupi Brahma realm related acquired self, formless acquired self. And there also Buddha mentioned the same procedure. There also he mentioned that his teaching is oriented towards abandoning that acquired self. And so that is also a happy state when such acquired self is abandoned. And then Buddha mentioned, so when I am talking on this, assume that a person is approaching me who is a Brahmin, who is a human, and he says that I consider this body as myself. And then Buddha mentioned, okay, this is not yourself. I am teaching you a Dhamma to abandon this acquired self, and this is the path, and this ultimately you will be in a quite happy state. So when I am talking like that, then Buddha asked from Pottapada, isn't it with proper base? Isn't it factual? Isn't it quite based on cause and effect? It's quite reasonable, isn't it? Don't you think like that? So then Pottapada say yes. Because a person is coming, approaching, and he is believing that this crossbody is the self. But Buddha mentioned, okay, this self I am trying to help you to abandon. This self-view I am trying to help you to abandon. This acquired self I am trying to make you to abandon. So you are with some wrong perception. Now I am teaching you Dhamma to abandon this wrong acquired self, this misbelief. So therefore, when I am able to teach it, and ultimately this person is capable of realizing it, so it is a kind of a well-grounded Dhamma. It's a solid, I mean, it's proven Dhamma. So therefore Buddha mentioned, using the same previous simile, that if there is a palace which is already built, and now a person is preparing a staircase to that, under the palace. Now people come and ask from him, are you building a staircase? Yes, I am building a staircase. Where is your palace? Yes, this is the palace. I am building a staircase under the palace so that one can climb the staircase and reach the palace. So therefore it's a quite reasonable activity this person is doing. So similarly Buddha mentioned, I am doing the same kind of a thing. I am teaching a quite grounded teaching, Dhamma, and therefore it is more factual, more realistic. And now at this point, a very interesting question is asked by Chitta. So if you can remember, Pottapada didn't come alone. He accompanied another person called Chitta. Chitta Hattisariputta. the Chitta, the son of the elephant trainer. Now at this point, Chitta asks a very interesting question. He asks, Bhante, Lord, whenever the gross acquired self is present, would it be wrong to assume the existence of the mind-made acquired self or of the formless acquired self? Does only the gross acquired self truly exist there? And similarly with the mind-made acquired self and the formless acquired self. This is a very, very interesting question. Now, his argument is, when you are experiencing gross acquired self, that is in the human realm, say for example, is it only you are telling that only the gross acquired self is available, none of the others? You don't have the formless acquired self, you don't have the mind-made acquired self. And on the other hand, assume that one is in the mind-made acquired self. Only that is available, not the gross acquired self, nor the formless acquired self. And when one is in the formless acquired self, none of the others are available, nor the, say, the gross acquired self, nor the mind-made acquired self. Is it what are you declaring? So then Buddha mentioned, Chitta, whenever the gross acquired self is present, we do not at that time speak of a mind-made acquired self. We do not speak of a formless acquired self. We speak only of a gross acquired self. Now here also, Buddha used the term speak. Rather than telling available, affirming, rather Buddha mentioned we speak. So these are kind of a conventional terms. When we are in the human realm, we are telling I am in the human realm. I have a human form. Now these are all conventions. It doesn't mean that I strongly have a self which now a human. Rather, we simply refer. So now we are going through the human realm. It's a temporary state maybe. For the easy communication, we are referring using languages. I am in human realm. I am a man. I am a woman. I am born in the human realm. This is how we may refer. So at that time, we have the human form and we don't have the, say, the arupa or the rupa, or the mind-made self or the formless self. So we only speak of the gross acquired self. So similarly, Buddha mentioned, when the mind-made acquired self is present, we speak only of the mind-made acquired self, and whenever the formless acquired self is present, we speak only of the formless acquired self. Now, Buddha further explained to Chitta, he is asking from Chitta, did you exist in the past or didn't you? Will you exist in the future or won't you? Do you exist now or don't you? If somebody asks from Chitta, Buddha is putting the question. Now if someone is asking from you, did you exist in the past? Didn't you? Will you exist in the future? Won't you? Do you exist now? Don't you? And then Chitta may answer. Actually, Chitta is giving the answer. So he mentioned, I did exist in the past. I did not exist. Yes, I did exist in the past. Now he similarly mentioned, I shall exist in the future. I shall not exist. I do exist right now. I do not exist. That Lord would be my answer. Now, further Buddha clarify here, if they ask, the past acquired self that you had, is that your only true acquired self? And are the future and present one false? Or is the one you will have in the future the only true one? And are the past and present ones false? Or is your present acquired self the only true one, and are the past and the present or the future ones are false? How you would reply? And then he may say, my past acquired self was at that time true. Assume that we are referring 1 year ago. At that time, yes, I had a self. At that time it is true, it was present, but not now, but not in the future. Similarly, say after a year, if I am living, I may have a self. It is true on that time, but not in the past, not in the present. Currently, I feel that I am existing. I have a self that is only right now, not in the past, not in the future. That is how I would reply. So the present, if I am talking on the present terms, my present acquired self is now the only one true. The past and future ones are false. So here actually all are communication. So that is something that we need to very clearly understand, even though the term self is used. So we are using it for the sake of communication. In just the same way, Chitta, whenever the gross acquired self is present, we do not at that time speak of a mind-made acquired self or formless acquired self. Right now, if I am in the human realm, I am simply saying, referring only this life, talking about a gross acquired self, but not the mind-made acquired self or the formless acquired self. Now, very interesting simile here Buddha highlight here. So he mentioned, from the cow we get milk. From the milk, curds. From the curds, butter. From the butter, ghee. And from ghee, cream of ghee. And when there is milk, we don't speak of curds or butter or ghee or cream of ghee. We speak only of milk. So you can recognize this statement. We are getting the milk from a cow. So at that time what we have is milk. Then using that milk, with time we prepare curd. Now we have curd. We are not using the term milk. And then we may convert curd into butter. And now what we have is butter. We are now not talking about milk or curd. But what we right now have is butter. And from butter, assume that one is making ghee. What he has right now is ghee. And from ghee, he is making cream of ghee. And now what he has is cream of ghee. Now you can understand how these are all changing phenomena, and once that particular form is available, so we are referring that, we are using terminology for that, and we may say, okay, milk was there, but it is not right now. Suppose now what we have is ghee, then we are telling, yes, now ghee is available. So all are past tense, present tense, future tense. So these are grammar. So we are using grammar for easy communication. So similarly, Buddha mentioned, whenever gross acquired self is present, we do not speak of the mind-made or the formless acquired self. Whenever mind-made acquired self is present, we do not speak of the gross or formless acquired self. When the formless acquired self is present, we do not speak of the gross acquired self or the mind-made acquired self. And these are merely names, expressions, terms of speech, designations in common use in the world, which the Tathagata also uses without misapprehending them. So this is a very interesting point. So Buddha also refers them. Buddha also used this terminology. Buddha also used this common language, maybe Sinhala language, maybe English language, maybe Tamil language, maybe Latin language. So all the typical languages. So whatever the normal mundane languages we are using to communicate among ourselves. And we are mostly using to say communicate among ourselves to discuss about our politics and discuss about our fuel and crisis, economic crisis and this and that. So this is the same language. But Buddha uses that without misapprehending that, without strongly holding that. Buddha doesn't consider all these terms, words, sentences, grammar available in the language as a kind of a strong, true, permanent kind of a thing. But he knows this is a kind of a communication. This is a kind of a designation. This is a kind of a speech. These are merely names, expressions. He knows that. Knowing that, he is using to explain the teaching, explain the Dhamma. So then actually after this was said, Potapada was quite happy and he mentioned that you have shown us the path like someone who make a light during the darkness and like bring an oil lamp into the darkness and to open the eyes. So likewise, so you have shown us the path, so I am now going for refuge under you and the Dhamma and the Sangha. Please consider me as a lay follower. Now Potapada wholeheartedly accept Buddha as his teacher and Dhamma as the teaching, what he need to practice, and the Sangha as an example who is following the path. Now Potapada go refuge with the Dhamma Sangha. And interestingly, Chitta, the other person who came along with the Potapada, he also same make a such kind of a praise towards the Buddha that you explain us Dhamma, beautiful Dhamma, and point out the proper way, and like showing a path who has got lost, and like bringing an oil lamp towards a dark place, so you have beautifully shown us Dhamma. So I too go for refuge in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Bhante, please receive the going forth at the Lord's hand. May I receive ordination. Now this Chitta want to go further, he want to become a monk. So then Buddha accepted him, he became a monk, he practiced the teaching, and after some time he was able to become an arahant. So that ends actually the whole Potapada Sutta. Very interesting points are highlighted in the sections that we have discussed today. One thing is that the self-view pertaining to those Indian society, they had a lot of confusion related to the self-view, and they were strongly believing of the self, and again they sometimes misunderstood about the communication, about the expressions, words, sentences, grammar, etc. They strongly believe that. They thought it is the true. As a result of that, a lot of confusions were arisen. And those Buddha mentioned that he is not misapprehending them, he is not strongly holding them, but he is using them just knowing the purpose. And he abandoned all the self-views, and he mentioned that I am making a teaching, I am declaring a teaching to abandon these self-views. So he highlights that part, and again he highlights the Four Noble Truths. So with that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching. Now I like to open the session for questions.
One question that we didn't get to last week, and then also there was a pre-submitted question. One of the questions said, "Hi Jennifer, this is just an observation. I just want to comment only. When I was coloring my hair, my eye became more and more. I tried to show the world that my hair is white. I'm going with natural, I'm perfect, so on. But later I stopped and started to color my hair. Then that eye not come with me. I'm so relaxed, then I was not coloring. So I guess, Sante, if you have any additional comments?
Actually, Jennifer, I didn't get the question. So she's coloring her hair, is it?
And so while coloring her hair, she observed that the eye became stronger and stronger.
I in the sense capital I. I is the capital I?
Yes, that's correct. And then there's thoughts of my hair, I'm perfect, etc., all of the I. And then after she stopped coloring her hair, then she felt like the I was not, she used the word not with me. I'm so relaxed when I am not coloring.
Okay, interesting question. So basically, we want to show off. We want to highlight ourselves. We always want to become a special person, a VIP. So that may basically enhance our self-view, enhance our eye-making, mind-making, conceit. So basically, these activities helps to build a self, help to strengthen this acquired self. But on the other hand, if we are living a quite humble lifestyle, being quite innocent, with, of course, with wisdom, and knowing how eye making, mind making, conceit happens, so that actually help us to abandon all these wrong notions, and basically to have a quite peaceful mind. Because whenever self view is available, you can't have that without grasping. So that is a very interesting point, highlighted by Venerable Punnamantani Putta to Venerable Ananda. So he mentioned, so you can't have the personality view, I view, myself, without any grasping. Grasping is a kind of a prerequisite for you to have the I, myself, mine. Whenever grasping is there, definitely you are undergoing some sort of suffering, kind of a frustration, kind of a, say, unfulfilled mental state. So you have something missing, a little bit of frustration. So these are the kind of suffering we are experiencing whenever I is available, whenever myself is available. Whenever I am available, I might feel that I am not a perfect person. I still have this to do. I still have that to do. I have done all these wrong things. Or else you may feel frustrated. I want to do that. I want to do this. I couldn't do that. What would be my future? What would going to happen in the future? So all the frustrations. Whenever a self is available, whenever I is available, whenever myself is available. But on the other hand, when you are disclaiming it, when you are trying to abandon it, so then basically you don't have that frustration. You are simply living in the present moment. Mind is quite relaxed. There is no eye making, mind making, or conceit. Rather, mind is in a non-grasping state. So therefore, you may feel relaxed. So what you are telling is true. So we can recognize how I am making a self. What are the supporting activities I am following to create a self, to highlight myself. Actually, that doesn't mean that I want to become a bigger and I want to become a kind of a timid person so that everybody may go on me. It doesn't. That is not the approach. Rather, we may use the terminology, we may play the role, we may play the role of our, say, job as a mother, as a father, as an administrator, like we discussed last time. We may play the role, but as Buddha mentioned, without misapprehending, without grasping it, but knowing the true purpose, knowing the value of it, knowing that these are merely designations, these are merely expressions, these are merely words, statements. So therefore, I like to highlight in that way, answer you in that way.
Regarding jhana, I'd like to present some questions and reflections. First question, there's speech of samatha jhana versus vipassana jhana. Where can this distinction be found in the sutta? Where is it mentioned that there are these two types of jhana? And then second question, sorry Bhante, the request was for me to finish reading everything, and then if Bhante, you need me to repeat the question, I can.
Right.
So the second question is, where in the sutta can I find the information that one has to come out of jhana in order to be able to develop insight through the jhanic experience? If my sources are correct, some people, including respected Bhante Hinnipola Gunaratna, came to the conclusion that there are no such evidences in the suttas. Furthermore, they argue that if an absorption is so deep that insight is not possible while in the absorption, then it is precisely not the kind of jhana which the Buddha taught. Therefore, it shouldn't even be called samatha jhana, but simply nitya samadhi, wrong concentration. For me, this makes much sense. It fits with my meditation experience so far. And it is in line with the Buddha's principle to teach only what leads to awakening. Generally, the Buddha doesn't encourage to doze off into states where the development of wisdom is not possible. Of course, if it nonetheless happens, one can reflect upon it afterwards. But this doesn't imply that this is the kind of absorption which the Buddha meant and taught. Please, respected Bhante, I'd appreciate your answers and some comments on this topic with much gratitude and respectful greeting. Bhante, would you like me to repeat the first question? I will
okay.
Send it to you in chat.
Sure, sure. Yes, please. Yeah, actually, so you have put it in the chat. That's a speech of samatha jhana versus vipassana jhana. Where can this distinction be found in the sutta? Actually, we can say like this. Say, typically, there's a convention is first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. So those are considered as the four material jhana or rupa jhana. And then there are the formless jhana, four formless jhana. Akasananchayatana, vinyananchayatana, akinchanyayatana, nevasanyana, asanyayatana. Now, these eight jhanas, one can typically say are the samatha jhana. On the other hand, there are certain others like, say, signless concentration, desireless concentration, emptiness concentration, say, fruition concentrations, and all sorts of different kinds of other things are there. Then that we can probably say are the vipassana jhana. So I can't say exactly a particular sutta which simply lists down all these things. Okay, these are the samatha and these are the vipassana. Probably just by reflection that the how one may achieve it may probably is the cause how people have categorized them. Say for example, assume that you are in the anapanasati and you are simply observing the anapana sign, the what you call the counterpart sign, and then the nimitta, and again you are applying your mind there, and ultimately your mind get trained there, your mind get absorbed there. And then, I mean, the wisdom part is not there yet, I mean, kind of reflection, kind of a wisdom, seeing that this is impermanent, unsatisfactory, non-self, so such kind of an approach is not there, it is absent. Rather, the concentration is more prominent, and as a result of that, mind is very much like locked there. So that is where the mind is absorbed, mind is locked, mind is confirmed, permanent in the sense I mean firm. And so we can say it's a samatha approach, it's a samatha jhana. But on the other hand, say you are practicing vipassana. Say you already have some build up concentration, it may be a samatha concentration, and with which you are observing various phenomena, maybe bodily phenomena, maybe various feelings, maybe various mental states, thoughts. And because of this observation, you may understand their impermanent nature, how transient they are, how quick, inconstant they are. Now this is a vipassana approach that we are talking. So you understand their reality. As a result of that, you may come to a state, I am just giving a single scenario here, explaining a scenario here. Say, as a result of this, your observation, more and more you understand the impermanent nature, and then you probably might not be able to recognize various signs. Now, if you want to recognize a sign, that means you need to have a perception of permanence. But now, things are extremely fragile, transient, so you can't hold a sign, you can't perceive a sign, because things are rapidly changing. Now mind become incapable of acquiring signs, remembering signs, storing, registering signs. As a result of that, mind becomes signless. Mind simply relinquish everything and it becomes signless. Now when you develop this state, so you can sort of experience what we call as the animitta samadhi, called the signless concentration. So since this signless concentration is based on a path, a practice, which is more towards the vipassana, so we can reasonably say, so what we experience right now is a vipassana concentration. But on the other hand, you can refer one book in this life itself, written by Sayadaw Upandita, where he mentioned more in this vipassana jhana. He actually not only the animitta, appanihita, sunyata, he consider vipassana jhana even before that. Say for example, you are observing various phenomena. Say for example, you are doing vedana anupassana, various feelings are there. Again and again you are applying your mind to different feelings. Now the applied thought is there and you observe them carefully. Thus, the sustained thought, vichara, is there. And assume that you are quite successful as a result of fair amount of piti is also there, rapcha is also there. Then comfortable is you are, because you now you are successful, so you are quite comfortable, happy, and mind is concentrated instantaneously to each and every feeling. So there are certain jhana factors, what we talk in the first jhana, is available. But the concentration is momentary concentration. It's not a single object that we are trying to keep and perceive this as a permanent thing. Rather, it's a natural, realistic phenomena, which is again and again arising and passing away. But we are able to maintain our concentration again and again onto that impermanent phenomena. But the jhana factors are very much available, so therefore he defines, okay, this is similar to first jhana, what we experience in the samatha practice, but this is a vipassana approach. Therefore we can say this is a vipassana jhana. So likewise he argues that the vipassana jhanas are available and nobody actually has refuted it. It's very much like kind of a understood and another way of interpretation. During vipassana, one may experience some amount of jhanic experience, because those jhana factors are still present in the jhana as in the vipassana as well. Now, therefore, this is the answer that I like to give on the first question, where you can come across vipassana jhana as well as the samatha jhana. Can you explain the second one, Jennifer?
Yes, Sanjay. The second one says, where in the sutra can I find the information that one has to come out of jhana in order to be able to develop insight through the jhana experience?
Yeah. So actually, I have received this question before, so I like to... I found a few suttas. Now, one sutta is called Attaka Nagara Sutta, where Venerable Ananda explains several experiences of jhana. Now, he mentioned that, assume that someone is achieving the first jhana, or someone is achieving even the second, third, fourth, and he may even expand it to the level of the cheto vimutti, the freedom of mind. And after achieved that, he made a kind of a radical reflection. So iti pati sanchikkati ayampikho metta cheto vimutti abhisankata abhisanchetayita yankopana kinchi abhisankatang abhisanchetayitang tang anichang niroda dhammati pajanati. Now this is the radical reflection. Like if you can remember when we are explaining Pottapada Sutta, so when someone reached the summit of perception, so he made a radical reflection. I should not further make any effort to arouse a new perception. Rather, I should make no intention at all. I should abandon all the intentions, volitions, and let the present perception also fade away. Then only he is able to touch the cessation, touch the nirodha. So similarly here also, one has achieved the jhana, and being there, now he make a reflection. Now actually when you are doing the reflection, you can't say you are in the jhanic experience. Rather, you make a radical reflection about the jhanic experience. You step back and make a reflection. Now as we do in Satipatthana, so we have a kind of a radical reflection, kind of a parato perception. So you go out of the experience, you come out of the experience, you step back, and then you do the reflection. So this is a very interesting point. Because while you are fully absorbed in the experience, you are there. I mean, you have no other perception at all. You are completely absorbed in the experience. You are completely locked in the experience, bounded by the experience. But on the other hand, when you are making a reflection, that means you are able to separate from the experience. You are out of the experience. And now you are recognizing the disadvantages of the existing experience. So this is the reflection. So this is impermanent. This is mind-made or made out of effort. Abhisanchetayitam. Abhisankatam. Abhisanchetayitam. Abhisankatam means this is a constructed state. I did a lot of preparations to arouse this state. Abhisanchetayitam, I made a volitional activity to prepare this state. So he recognized all these preparations he made in order to accomplish the jhana. Now he is not in the jhana, but has come out of it, taken the back seat, and now he is reflecting. Make a kind of a very realistic decision. Tang anichang, tad nichang. So this is also impermanent. Nirodha dhammang. So therefore this is also passing away. So this radical reflection is the vipassana he is doing. So that is not within or not being in the experience, but coming out of the experience. While being out of the experience, you make this radical reflection. So that is why we typically say, so while being in the jhana, you can't make vipassana. Rather, you need to come out of jhana, step back, look at it objectively, then make the radical reflection. And another sutta is what we call Dutiya Puggala Sutta, coming in the Anguttara Nikaya Chatukka Nipata. So where Buddha mentioned, say, when one is in the first jhana, so here pataman jhana upasampajja viharati, so yadeva tatta hoti rupagatam, vedanagatam, sanyagatam, sankharagatam, vinyanagatam, te dhamme anicchato, dukkato, rogato, gandato, sallato, agato, abadato, parato, palokato, sunyato, anattato, samanupassati. Now these are all vipassana approaches. Say you are in the first jhana, but now you consider the impermanent nature of the first jhana. Anicchato, the suffering nature of the first jhana, the disease nature of the first jhana. Then the gandato, what you call kind of boil, kind of dart, sallato, agato, abadato, like a disease. Parato, it is like someone else's. Palokato, it is quite fragile. Sunyato, it is empty. Anattato, it is non-self. So all these are vipassana reflections. So while being there, you can't, do it. Rather, you have to be there for some time, and then you step back and then make this wise reflection. So that is why we typically say, while completely absorbed in the jhana, you are there, you are locked there, you can't do a radical reflection. In order to do the radical reflection, you need to step back. You need to come out of it. You need to maintain a distance. Then only you can do this reflection. Yeah.
Thank you, Bente. So the next question, I'd like to invite San. You may unmute.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Jennifer. Bente, so this question, I had this question for quite a while, but I think it's quite pertinent that I bring this up today because of the topic which was discussed, which is the self-view. The question, when one achieves sotapanna state, it is said that sakkaya ditti, vichikicca and silabhata paramasa are relinquished or removed. And at that point, when you say sakkaya ditti, the word itself can be roughly translated to svakaya drushtiya, basically one's body view. So what I'm trying to ask is, what exactly is removed at the sotapanna state when we say sakkaya ditti is removed? Because you can't completely remove the self-view until one achieves the arhant state, because there's avijja still remaining up to that point. So this is basically the question I have, whether it is the body, my body, the view of my body is what is removed at sotapanna state, or is it something beyond that, where even the self-view is tied with all the other things, such as I'm such and such a person, I'm a tall person, I'm a short person, I'm a Sri Lankan, and so on and so on, which makes our identity complete. I hope I have
Actually, I think only to some extent, as you mentioned, these misunderstandings are removed, and only when one becomes an arahant that one is able to completely eradicate this thing. So basically, the sakkaya ditti typically explained in the suttas, as you know, pertaining to the body, then the feelings, perceptions, volitional formations and the consciousness, each and everyone can be considered four ways. Say, this body is myself, this body belongs to me, or myself belongs to the body, or likewise, I mean, there are different ways that one may perceive the body. Similarly, the feelings, similarly the perceptions, similarly the formations, and similarly the consciousness. So the most gross form, I think, one may remove. I am just giving a single example, safe example. If one consider the body, say, typically we consider this body is I am. So, but when one does the elements meditation, so more and more one may recognize the element characteristics in the body. So, and that also quite impermanent, and therefore one has more understanding about the real nature of the body. It is not a single body, it is made out of the four elements, and they are also quite transient, has no permanent structure, no permanent nature. So likewise, all different ways, it is proven now you can't have a solid body, you can't have a permanent body, you can't have an everlasting body. So likewise, the typical say permanent kind of bounded structure of the body is broken. Now everything very much like broken into pieces, and you can't have the boundary about the body. And at that time, very much like, so the single body has become a particle body, and everything has collapsed. You can't create a solid body. Now within such kind of a situation, where am I attributing as myself? So the more gross kind of a belief, thinking that this body is a permanent entity, lasting some time, and it's a single thing, it belongs to me. So that kind of very gross level of misunderstanding may be eliminated. So we can argue the same way related to the feelings, to the perceptions, to the formations, and the consciousness. So more and more one may understand each and every aggregate as a kind of, not as a solid thing, but as something impermanent, but as something arising and passing away, and conditioned. And when that sort of an understanding is available, that may be helping to abandon the self-view. But as you mentioned, still one may go wrong. That's an interesting point. So temporarily he is out of these wrong perceptions. As a result of that, maybe he is released. But still, mind may still try to do these wrong perceptions. So again and again he has to train his mind, don't do it, not to do it. So there's a very interestingly mentioned in the Mula Pariyaya Sutta. So for a seeker, for a trainee, so he is trying to mention pataving patavito abhinyaya pataving ma manyi. Knowing that the earth element as earth element, the hardness as hardness, he is trying to train the mind not to think a self out of it. Ma manyi. So don't do it. Don't wrongly misunderstand it. You have seen it already. Now don't do the same mistake again. So it's very much like training the mind. So that indicates, even though the self view is abandoned, the gross view is abandoned, still the existing kind of an influence is maybe available. But the sotapanna, the trainee, is trying to reflect that he already understood it. Didn't you do it? Didn't you understand that during the practice? So don't do the foolish thing again. So likewise, he is trying to very much like train the mind, because he hasn't completely, fully comprehend the whole thing. But a kind of a glimpse of understanding has arisen when he become a sotapanna. But still mind may be doing the same mistake time to time. So he is trying to train him, train the mind, trying to convince the mind, trying to enlighten the mind, awaken the mind to the reality. So therefore, as you have mentioned, so till one become an arahant, so this self-making, I-making may be happening. So we have to admit it, we need to recognize it, and try to abandon it, not to affirm it, not to feed it, not to fertilize it. So that is why actually now you can remember when Visakha has lost her niece, she came crying towards the Buddha, because she considers, oh, she is my niece. She has passed away. It's a great loss to me. Now, everywhere the self-view. Niece is a person, I am a person, so I lost my niece. So this is taking the typical conventional terms too strongly. Then, with the teaching of the Buddha, advice of the Buddha, now again, Visakha was able to arouse wisdom. Now she was able to stop crying. So therefore, as far as the evidences are telling us, oh, Sotapanna may not be a perfect person which is completely out of the self-view, but might have seen the reality, but not yet fully. Time to time he may go through certain delusions, but quickly he can abandon them. Quickly he can consolidate his understanding. Yeah. Tharavan Sannai.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Sitar Devi for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Yes, Bhante, you kind of answered my first question partly by giving the explanation to the previous speaker. However, what I wanted to ask you on that particular topic was that you spoke about the gross acquired self and then the mind-made acquired self and formless acquired self. So what my understanding is that the Sotapanna loses the concept or has some understanding about the gross acquired self but not the mind-made acquired self and the formless acquired self. Would that be right?
Yeah, that is also a very interesting answer. Yeah, I can agree with you because, Buddha explained it in that way also through the fetters, 10 fetters. So the first 5 fetters are the ones binding us towards the sensual realm.
Yes.
So if one is able to completely abandon the 5 fetters, so that means we may not be reborn in the sensual realm. But still the higher realms are still, our defilement help to be reborn. When one has abandoned all the higher fetters, another 5 fetters, then only one may be not reborn into the arupa and the rupa realms. So as you mentioned, so therefore we can say when one become an anagami, then only one is able to abandon all the kind of desires, tanha, craving, etc. Pertaining to the sensual realm is abandoned.
Yes. So actually the Sotapanna has the rupa raga and arupa raga anyway, no Bhante?
Yes.
So
And not only that, even the Kamachanda Vyapada is available for Sotapanna.
Very nicely explained to the previous speaker that this person is able to understand and experience it in the deep meditation, but when he or she comes out of it, you can revert to type, but to a lesser extent than an otherwise not at the same level person. That's correct, isn't it?
Yeah, we can, because understanding was there profoundly at a given time when you were practicing.
Yes.
But because of the power of the defilements, probably again you might get deluded.
Yes.
But at that time, you are not permanently deluded because that previous insight may help us to come out of that delusion.
Yes. So that's a good answer, Bhante. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other part that you did touch on it, but I just wanted to expand it. You spoke about the summit of perception, and you said at that stage you abandoned volition and and the present perception that the person is experiencing. Can you just expand a little bit more in simple terms, please?
No, that is where now, say, in Samatha practice, it's more kind of a, say, satisfaction-based and a kind of a blissful states that we are, say, experiencing. And one may probably even addicted to that. I mean, it's a strong term I am using. I mean, one may further and further refining one's perception and one experience more and more sublime states, subtle states. So one may like to be there, one may like to dwell there, without making this kind, without making this kind of a radical reflection. So whenever you are decided, whenever you want to whenever you want to see the disadvantages of this whole process, whole preparations, whole constructions, you need to altogether stop it. So this is a strong kind of a reflection that you are doing. I mean, so far what you did was you understood the disadvantages of the existing state. Therefore, you want to become to a new state which is more refined and more subtle and more advanced. So the gross perception is abandoned, new subtle perception is arisen. But now you are doing that for some time. As a result of that, now very much like you are fed up with it. You understood even the, the meaningless activity that we were doing. We were abandoning a gross state, but acquiring ourselves, putting ourselves back onto a new state, new perception. So how about completely abandon all the perceptions, not to make any intention? Because making an intention is a suffering. Sabbe sankhara dukkha. Making an intention, making a volitional thinking, trying to do something is suffering. So as a result of that, so once you are there, you do recognize this disadvantages of the present state and also understand the futile activity that you are doing by arousing or trying to cling towards a new state. That clinging towards a new state, that becoming process, bhavatanha, now you are going to abandon. I don't want to become a new person. I don't want to be with a new perception. Let me completely free from everything. So there's a kind of a radical reflection one may do. So as a result of that, the existing perception start to fade away because you are not supporting it. And there is no new state for you to hook up, to hold on, to cling to, because you don't have a desire for a new state. As a result of that, mind stops. As a result of that, the one may experience a cessation, the Nirodha.
So in that Nirodha state, is the mind kind of blank?
That's the question that you need to ask. So what should be there? That's the point. So that is why, so Buddha explained it in different manner. It can't have any sign. So therefore it is signless. It can't have any desire. Therefore it should be desireless. It can't have anything, any substantial thing. Therefore it should be empty. Sunyata. So either way, whenever you are accomplishing signless, actually you have the properties, characteristics of the other two. So it is the most kind of the approach that one is taking. So whenever mind becomes signless, so that indicates you are not holding any permanent thing. Because whenever you have the permanent notion, nitya sanya, that indicates you have some kind of a sign. But when the signs are completely abandoned, the mind becomes signless. Mind is empty. Mind has no perception. Mind has no sign. No mark. So mind is very much like blank.
So these things are all, what I'm understanding is that when one goes into the jhanic state, only then when you come out of this that you can actually Because when one is meditating and going into a fairly good concentration, it is very pleasant, as you said. And when one comes out of it, only that one is should be contemplating on the
yes.
things that you are talking about. Because
yes.
from a lot of the sutras that we are reading, I don't know, somebody that first question, I don't know, I didn't quite agree, because there are a lot of sutras that you are reading, the Buddha is all the time talking about the jhana.
Yeah, he is talking about the jhana and also talking about how to recognize the disadvantages of jhana and to make a radical reflection about them, and as a result of that, leading towards the cessation.
Yes,
yes. Yeah.
And even the Anapanasati also, he ends that by saying that, and even the four foundations of mindfulness, he's talking about it. So, anyway, the other thing you said about that you gave some names about the sutras, you said Sattakanagara Sutta, is that right?
I'll put it into the chat. So, Attakanagara Sutta. Attakanagara Sutta. So, this is.
And then you talk of.
Another. Another one is called. Attakanagara. Nagara is a city. Attaka means eight.
Yes, Nagara, yes. And Attaka is eight, right?
Eight, yes, yes. So, here, Venerable Ananda is giving an answer, telling that there are eight ways to achieve the freedom. Eight ways to achieve this kind of... Now, in other terms, if I am joining this with the Pottapada Sutta, there are eight summits of perceptions through which you can touch the cessation. And then another one is called Dutiya Puggala Sutta. Puggala Sutta. So this is in the Anguttara Nikaya. Anguttara Nikaya. So if I put the Sinhala one, let me put the Sinhala link. So this is where actually Buddha say after achieving the first jhana, for example. So there is some sort of a perception into that first jhana. There is some sort of a bodily formations available in that time. There is a kind of a feelings available in at that time. There are various formations going on. So that very aggregates Buddha mentioned, one is recognizing as impermanent, recognizing as unsatisfactory, recognizing as kind of a boil. Kind of likewise, I mean, all the different approaches, vipassana approaches Buddha has mentioned, anicchato, dukkato, rogato, gandato, sallato, agato, abadato, parato, palokato, sunyato, anattato. Now, all these are different ways of looking at these different phenomena, more in a vipassana angle, so that you are able to abandon this state. You understand the disadvantages of these forms, these feelings, these perceptions, and as a result of that, you may ultimately touch the cessation.
These states are all got during the meditation, isn't that right?
Yes.
Because what I'm trying to say, sometimes we like to apply it on a practical basis also, you know, when we are just walking or whatever, but I don't suppose we can get all those reflections easily when we are in the real world.
No, we can't say so. Because now, I mean, in the jhana, of course, you may need to have a more firm posture and to be in there. But on the other hand, when one is involved in the vipassana, say you are practicing citta anupassana, for example. So you are constantly observing the mind. So various thoughts are coming to the mind and you are observing a particular thought. And to this thought, when you recognize how quickly it passed away, how it quickly it disappeared, then you understand the very impermanent nature of the thought. That is the sankhara khanda. So therefore, you are not in the jhana, but you are in the vipassana. So we need to understand now the suttas I have given here are where jhana being reflected, jhana being put under the scrutiny of vipassana. But there are other methods. Yeah, from the beginning, you are understanding the disadvantages, the consequences, the drawbacks of various phenomena. So from the beginning, you are developing that perception. From the beginning, the vipassana approach is applied. We'll take one.
The vipassana.
Yes.
Because I don't know all the sutras that I have with Buddha or talking about jhanic. I mean, that's fine. I mean, you know, that's wonderful. But we also like to see the other aspects.
Yes. Correct.
Thank you, Bhante.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Hi, Bhante. There's a quick question about the Saturday program. Can you confirm the time? Because when the participant logged in at 7 a.m. Sri Lanka time, I believe the class had already started.
Yeah. So actually, sorry about the last time, because on last Saturday, our Sangha Uposatha was put on. So as a result of that, I have to attend that at 7:30. So therefore, I have adjusted the time to 6:30 for the Saturday program, that monthly program. But Miss Shalika is preparing, organizing. So that is why we have shifted the program to 6:30 Sri Lanka time. But from next time onwards, actually, we may conduct it on the 7 a.m. Sri Lanka time.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
And may the participant reach out to Sarita to get any updates to schedule adjustments?
Actually, Shalika has sent an email telling the adjustment of the time. Probably this person haven't received it.
Yeah, okay. I will forward this person's email to Shalika. Thank you.
Okay, yeah.
So the last question is from Shreeni. I'd like to invite you to unmute, please.
Thank you very much. It's a beautiful sutra, and you explained it so very clearly, and especially with questions and answer time. Your answers are so very, very good that I realized a lot at that time. And what I felt was that, I think my way of bhavana, I want to find out about bhavana. It's more like a 24-hour thing that I do because I'm aware of what's happening around me. And and then what happens is that you're aware of the afterbirth and the dukkha-anatta aspects of life, the jati-jara, the adhimarana. And then you realize the elements, the changing nature of it, and therefore I think you lose, you can't give value to anything as it is further. Like when you realize the five aggregates are suffering, and also like you mentioned the sutras, like the Sila Sutra talks of anicca-to, dukkha-to, and roga-to, etc., up to anatta-to. So when you sort of look at all of this, and then when you can't place value to anything, I think you let go of it, like chaga, and then you can sort of, to a certain degree, disconnect with the body, and the feelings, and the sanna, sankara, vijnana as well. And then you can't give value to that, then it's easy to let go, and also you realize all the details. Like this sutra really covers even what Thakbhasa Sutra talks of, all the details. I felt it was really lovely, and also I felt that one can't give any value to the rupa or the arupa words also, because they are also impermanent. And then you realize that there's nothing but nibbana if you want peace and freedom to get out of samsara. And now my question to you, Bhante, is like when you sit down formally to meditate, because one has been looking at things throughout the day, I suppose, if the mind is sort of blank, do you remain in that blankness so that you're focusing on the blankness, that space, or do you have to contemplate on things? This is where I'm not really sure what I should do from now on. Thank you.
Yeah, so basically if the mind is not holding anything, not grasping anything, not cling on to anything, if the mind is fairly blank and there is no stress at all, and there's a kind of a pleasant abiding and no tension, so then you just have to be there. Because if we are doing something, then we are back on the preparing of formations. Again, we are doing something. But we are, if the mind is completely relinquish everything, doesn't want to have any burden, doesn't want to associate anything, doesn't want to hold on to any perception, any mark, sign, so that's why it is empty. Mind is blank. And then, I mean, we have nothing to do. So mind is in a perfect situation. So we need to maintain that. So that's a very interesting point Buddha highlights. Vimuttatta titang titatta santusitang santusitatta na paritasati. So mind had stopped. Mind does not waver. Mind does not go this, grasp this and that. So basically mind has come to a kind of a standstill. At that time, titatta santusitam. So now the mind has to have kind of a gladness. Santusitatta na paritasati. As a result of that, there is no agitation. Now typically what happens is, even though mind is blank, even though mind has some sort of non-grasping nature, still there could be a little agitation. I want to do something. There could be something more. Is it correct? What else I need to do? Or we can't simply maintain that calm, peaceful state, but there's a kind of an inner urging coming, inner agitation coming. So that agitation also has to be abandoned. So that very, very kind of a urgency coming has to be abandoned. So sometimes Buddha mentioned it has sort of a passaddhi we need to have. So once things are settled, once things are calm, peaceful, no grasping at all, no tension, so just maintain it. Try to maintain that mind more quietly, more peacefully. Try to enjoy the inner silence. So how about enjoying inner silence? So you can't enjoy inner silence until you are not appreciating the inner silence. Until you are very much be satisfied there. Till you are asking something more, you can't have kind of an appreciation. So when you don't want anything more, when you have completely abandoned the bhavatanha, then only you can be fully satisfied, fully contented. So therefore, once you reach this non-grasping state, we need to reflect in that line. I should not make any more kind of agitations or any constructions. Rather, I need to simply be here quietly, peacefully, enjoying the present moment, enjoying the inner silence. Yeah. Okay, I think we need to wind up the session. Jennifer, can you wind up the session?
Yes, Sanjay. That's all of the questions for tonight. Thank you very much.
So, can you do the sharing of merits? Okay, okay.
Okay, then.
My throat has a problem. Okay, then. So then,
like, would you like to get a drink?
Yeah. I'm okay. Drinking some hot water. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, then. Then we'll wind up the session. Actually, we have spent almost 2 hours. All the acquired, say, merits we'll share with all the beings, all the celestial beings, all the past relatives, and we'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mam param. Idam vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukhitā hontu ñātayo. Idam vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukhitā hontu ñātayo. Idam vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukhitā hontu ñātayo. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.